call the May 22nd meeting of the Genoa Township Board of Zoning Appeals. It is 7 p.m. and we have a very limited schedule tonight, but I will at this time call the roll. Mr. Phillips?
Here.
Ms. Driscoll?
Here.
Ms. Yu?
Here.
Mr. Boone?
Here.
Mr. Bishop?
Here.
Okay, the chair is here. Sabelle Smith is absent. And the first item on the agenda is the meeting minutes from the prior meeting of March 27th, 2018. Give you a moment to look over those if you haven't already, and then I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Move to approve the March 2018 minutes.
Okay. I second.
Okay, Dorothy seconds. And any discussion? Any revisions?
Bottom of page one, exhibits A through, I think I should say I.
Taking E.
First sentence.
Where is he going?
Oh, the extra I hanging there. Oh, it should say exhibit E rather than E through I.
Oh, got it. He's got good eyes.
And since we're there, I would appreciate it if my name was spelled right on page three under public comments. It's not critical, but. I think that's all I see. Anyone else? Okay, we have a motion and a second. There's no further discussion. Then we will call the roll. Mr. Boone?
Yes.
Ms. Driscoll?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Ms. Yu?
Abstain.
Okay. Mr. Bishop?
Abstain.
Okay. And the chair votes yes. Motion is carried, minutes are approved. Next item of business on the agenda is the election of officers. And the first office being the chairman. So I'll leave it open to you guys.
Move to nominate Mark Harmon to serve as the chairman once again.
And I second that.
Move to close the nominations.
Immediately.
We drew straws and I lost. Okay. No, seriously. If anybody else is interested. Okay. Any discussion? And I can leave the room.
You don't need to.
Okay.
You do a wonderful job. We want you.
Okay. Thank you. Then I will call the roll. Mr. Boone. We can close, yes, to close nominations. Mr. Boone?
Yes.
Ms. Driscoll?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Bishop?
Yes.
Ms. Yu?
Yes.
And the chair will abstain. And then we will call the roll for the election, unless you have any discussion, we'll call the roll for election of the chair.
You mean the vice chair?
No, we're still on the chair. We just closed the nominations for the chair. Okay, then I'll call the roll. Mr. Boone?
Yes.
Ms. Driscoll?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Aye.
Mr. Bishop?
Yes.
Ms. Yu?
Yes.
And the chair abstains. Okay, the next, yes.
You seconded the closing of the
nomination. I did. Okay, then we'll go into vice chair nomination.
I nominate Mark Phillips again.
Okay. And I'll second that nomination. And discussion? Then I would move to to close the nominations for vice chair. Somebody wants a second?
Second.
Okay, Mr. Boone seconds. And we will call the roll for closing nominations for vice chair. Mr. Boone?
Yes.
Ms. Driscoll?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Same.
Mr. Bishop?
Yes.
Ms. Yu?
Yes.
And the chair votes yes. And we will move into the election unless there's any discussion. And I'll call the roll. We need a motion to move into the election. So if somebody would like to move.
I will move.
Thank you, Ms. Yu. Second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Okay, call the roll. Mr. Boone?
Yes.
Ms. Driscoll?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips? Mr. Bishop?
Yes.
Ms. Yu?
Yes.
Chair votes yes. Okay. And our final piece of business is, I'll introduce Andrew King, who's with the County Prosecutor's Office. He's going to conduct a training session on procedure for the board. So go ahead and take it away.
How's everyone doing?
Good.
Great. So, as was mentioned, I am an assistant prosecutor for the County Prosecutor's Office, obviously. And had an opportunity to train on a number of things before and did this training like this for Harlan Township. So, you know, it's called a training. Most of you have been doing this for a while, so I'm going to just hit some high points, hopefully remind you of things that maybe you've forgotten or emphasize things that you already know. And then if you have questions or want to have a discussion, I'm happy to do that. I know one of the things when we did something like this in Harlem was sometimes one board didn't necessarily know what the other board did or didn't really understand what the zoning inspector did or didn't really understand what the trustees did. So it sort of helped flesh everybody's rollout. So, you know, we can talk about zoning broadly if that tickles your fancy. So what better thing to do tonight than talk about land use, right? And I must say, and I'll even say this, that this is being recorded, I'm happy to be with the BZA because I sit on my own, where I live, I sit on my BZA. So it's a much, much better board. They're always looking for trouble. You guys are solving problems, so.
Right.
I think we are.
A lot of days.
So anyhow, with that shameless begging out of the way, so let's see if I get that started. So this has come up a couple of times recently. Like, it came up a little bit in the Cardinal Storage, which I know started out life as a variance request, like a million variance requests. And jumped over to the planning side. So you won't deal with this as much, but I just thought it's worth pointing out because you might run into these arguments as these issues get more litigious in Genoa Township and as more applicants get counsel, they might start bringing these arguments up here so that they can flesh them out later if they lose. So one of the things that you may get an argument about, and this is particularly important when you're looking at things on the face of it, which you really won't accept for conditional use, is there has to be some relationship between what's being sought and the statutory ground. So it has to have some basis in promoting health and welfare and whatever. So that's pretty broad, but it still somehow has to tack back to that. So occasionally, you may get a challenge where it says, density is one that's sort of big right now with the Zoning Commission, is that whatever number you're establishing isn't reasonable. So you might get an argument like that in the context of like a use variance or maybe a conditional use permit. Vagueness, again, you might get something along that line where just saying, hey, the way the zoning resolution is written, for example, on conditional use permits and what you're supposed to consider and how you're supposed to do it is just not, you can't follow it. And, you know, signs, free speech, that you're going to run into that maybe with variant stuff, so just be that's where you want to be careful, is that you don't start a pattern of saying, well, it's a church, we'll give them a sign, no big deal, but then when the next group comes around, it's a political sign, we don't really like those as much. That's where you'll start to get yourself in trouble, especially if you say that. So equal protection, again, it's not going to influence you as much, but you know, this is just sort of hitting the high points. Again, that argument came up a little bit recently with the Cardinal storage, and you know, sort of the idea is that if you're going to allow something over here in this one context, you can't discriminate over here on the other for somebody else. And you know, I flipped through some cases to sort of refresh my memory on some of this stuff, and applicants sometimes get very creative. I mean, somebody brought a housing discrimination case in a very rural area, basically saying, well, if you don't let us put apartments up, you're violating the Federal Housing Act because you're discriminating against minorities. Because they can't move there without, and the court was like, no. But you still may get that argument. And the last one is sort of a takings, and again, this one you may sort of get in a roundabout way when you're asked to do like a use variance. It's sort of saying, if you don't give us a use variance, there's nothing I can do with this property, and that's essentially a taking. I think Joe Miller sort of a couple of times made that very argument on a number of things. So,
Andrew, a quick question.
Sure.
And I won't continue to interrupt you, but
no.
Those statutory arguments, that's really not for us to determine here. At this level, I would assume we're going to either approve it or reject the application based upon what we see before us. You don't want us getting into constitutional arguments at this level, do you?
No, but what I would look at it as more like the guardrails. So like what I said with the speech thing, just be cognizant of it, especially if the applicant raises it.
It is awareness.
Right. So if they're saying, hey, if you don't give me this sign, you're violating my First Amendment right. Now, it could be just puffery. You know, I'm trying to make an argument and trying to get you guys to get all scared and vote my way. But at the same time, you should maybe take a step back and say, well, have we really done this differently? You know, if a church came or the Boy Scouts came, would we treat this request differently? And if you have in the past, then maybe you sort of need to rethink your approach. So I bring that up more sort of, like I said, more of like the guardrails. You're not going to be asked to affirmatively decide on this, but if they sort of say there's no way that if you read this conditional use standard that you can apply this, then you sort of maybe say, well, maybe that is an issue that we need to have taken to the zoning commission. Yeah. So no, does that sort of...
Yeah, we're just going to let it go to the next level.
Yeah, just be cognizant if they're saying you're going to violate my constitutional right or you're out kicking your coverage here. So sort of to your point, the boards are creatures of statute, so you only have those powers that are given to it. So again, you know, the statute actually lays out a number of things that zoning can't touch, or, you know, in your case, it's not particularly applicable, but occasionally, you know, run into stuff like ag exemption, the agritourism, things like that. So it's good to sort of have a general idea. For example, and I don't remember if it's Delaware Township or Brown Township, this group is, I think they're in the process of doing it. They're doing a big agritourism type operation. They're going to have weddings, they're going to have barn dances, they're going to have, you know, hay rides and cornfields and all that kind of stuff. So they were able to cram most of what they wanted to do into the agritourism exception, but not everything. So then they had to go to get, I think, a conditional use permit or some variances or whatnot.
Yes.
So sort of being aware of that there may be things that are exempt from zoning and you can't touch those might help you just being aware of it, that you don't sort of wander off and sort of say, well, I'm kind of concerned about these barn square dances you're having. You know, is that really proper? It's not agritourism. There's not much you can do about it. So again, I mean, this is just, like I said, I wanted to sort of give a general overview. So as you know, there's five of you and two alternates. You know, I think we've advised, and I think it's consistent with what Don Brocious and Pete Griggs have advised, is that only five of you sit up here, participate, ask questions at a time. So, you know, on my BZA, we try to get the alternate to come only if it's necessary, but you know, I know sometimes boards like everybody to come, and if somebody, you know, gets a flat tire or whatever, there's an alternate there. So it's really whatever your practice is. So, again, some of you are quite experienced in this. The primary difference between your board and the zoning commission is you're considered quasi-judicial, whereas the zoning commission is typically legislative. So what that means is, like, a rezone is legislative, which is why people get to do a referendum on it if they don't like get to do a referendum, they get to appeal it to the common pleas court. So by being quasi-judicial, that's both good and bad. It's good in the sense that you have a little bit more finality in your decision-making. But because it's quasi-judicial, then you have to be a little bit more cognizant of due process. So if somebody, you know, makes an argument that, oh, you're very, you know, you're interested, you're too close, you live here and that, I think as BZA members, you should take those things a little bit more to heart than if you sit on the Zoning Commission. Because there is a due process right when you're sitting in this capacity for you to be a fair, impartial adjudicator. Whereas, you know, the legislative process is not considered that. It's more wheeling and dealing and that kind of thing. So that, you know, you don't have that sort of due process interest in a Zoning Commission hearing, generally speaking. And as you know, that, you know, it has to be a public meeting unless you want to adjourn into executive session for deliberations. My commentary on that is I know most BZAs, at least most that I've been, don't like to go into executive session to deliberate, which is fine. But just be mindful of what you're going to say, especially if you're in the minority. It has happened that when a suit happens, that person gets quoted very liberally and sort of speaks for the board and whatnot. So again, if you're going to do that publicly and you either quickly discover you're going to be in the minority or you're not, I'm not saying that you can't exercise your right as a board member to say what you want, but, you know, just be mindful of what you're saying. It'll probably be wielded as a sword against the rest of the board. So, and I sort of highlighted this, and I sort of asked Susan on the side, 519.15, it actually gives the board its own ability to set a lot of its rules and practice and procedure. So if you guys want to follow Robert's rules, that's your call. You know, the actual scope of the rule is left a little vague as to what the Zoning Commission and the trustees can tell you to do and what you can sort of figure out for yourself. So generally speaking, I think the way we've sort of fallen down on it is, you know, things like fees and that kind of stuff generally have to be set by the zoning resolution. There's some AG opinions on that. But, you know, more often than not, like when you meet, sort of what your rules of procedure, you have a little more flexibility on that because the statute says the BZA shall set its rules and whatnot. So it's not an invitation necessarily to start a war with the Zoning Commission, but just telling you that, and to be honest with you, we've had a little bit of this on our board where the Zoning Commission tries to say, well, it's got to be three votes always. If there's only three people that meets a quorum, it can't be 2-1. Well, how can you tell us that? We're bored. Like, we get to. So anyhow, and then, of course, you know, you get to administer oaths, call witnesses, do the notice of the meeting, all that really fun stuff.
And they do have, the BZA does have its rules of procedure. Probably a good thing to, maybe we should look.
Probably would be good.
Good to look through that again, yes. And make sure that everybody's in agreement.
Because I can tell you, the first few meetings I was on the board as an alternate, the first meeting I was on, there was only three of us here, and I was an alternate. And it took all, the rules were then, and I assume they haven't changed, took all three votes yes
right.
To approve the application. And so I don't think anything has changed. But going forward, you know, that was probably 6 or 7 years ago, going forward, our attendance, it really hasn't been an issue in the last, 3 or 4 years. So
should those be adopted every year like bylaws?
Wouldn't hurt, because I mean that way that every board member sort of knows. And I'm a big fan of doing consent motions and consent agendas, like your elections thing. Like, it's just my personal personality. My personality is that, like, why have a nomination? Just say, you know, by consent, can we?
Yeah.
You know, so those are things that you may want to look at from time to time, especially if you have a very collegial board. You say, well, we can maybe sort of ratchet down, be a little bit more relaxed with the procedures, and then if you get some new members or you have some.
So they're up to speed.
Right.
So on a motion for a case, do they need to take a vote, or can they do a consent agenda vote for, you know, approving a variance or a conditional use?
I mean, as far as voting goes, there's really sort of two general rules. Is one, you can't do a secret ballot. That's the AG said that you can't do it, which makes sense. Would be an end run around public meetings if you do a secret ballot. And you generally only have to do a roll call vote when the statute requires you to do it, or your procedure, your internal procedures call for you to do it. So if you want to do it as a voice vote, you want to do it as, like I said, sort of more informal, it's kind of up to you, and there's no requirement that it be a roll call vote every time. I mean, what I think is what happens is, because there are a few instances like going into executive session to do roll call vote, I think boards a lot of times just do roll call vote so they never make a mistake. Mm-hmm. There's a few individual cases. So, nothing, again, you're only required to do it when you're required to do it, so however you want to handle it is.
But just to make things go like minutes, they could do the consent.
Yeah.
And then, if on for the variance or a conditional use, they could still do roll call. It doesn't matter if they go back.
No, and I don't know if you've been on school boards. It just seems like school boards do consent agendas and consent stuff more often than townships do. And I don't know why that is. So, probably because they just want to get it. They want to hire three teachers and then moving somebody. It's like, we just want to get stuff done. So,
how can we get a copy of the procedures? Can you do that?
Just got them.
Right here. We'll have them next month.
That'll be staff.
So as you probably know, there's really sort of three areas that you're going to hear stuff. Three issues, I guess, that are going to come in front of the board. It's hearing appeals. So somebody thinks that whatever Joe did administratively is wrong, whether that's issuing a citation or refusing to issue a permit. They can say, hey, I'm entitled to that. The zoning inspector screwed up. You guys fix it. So, that's where the name BZA comes from. Granting variances, that comes from the statute, and that's sort of, the state of Ohio just gave that gift right to you. There's really not much that the zoning commissioner or the trustees can say about that. That's considered a delegation more or less from the state. And the issuance of conditional use permits, now that is sort of the 180-degree opposite. That comes directly from the zoning resolution. So if the zoning resolution does not allow you to issue conditional use permits, so I'll touch on a little bit more later. Now, the other thing, which almost never happens, is revoking conditional use permits. And that very narrow circumstance is when it's with mining. Otherwise, you can't revoke conditional use permits. The only way that the township can do anything about somebody that's violating the scope of the conditional use permit or doing something outside of the permit is to contact us and file suit. So I think every once in a while we get that question, can we sort of snatch back the permit? And that's just not the way the state of Ohio wants it to work. They want the courts to be the ones to enjoin that person and essentially take the permit back. So I mentioned what the appealing was. You guys, I think, the staff here handles a lot of the background, getting stuff on the calendar. And, when people have to file notice, it's 20 days. 10 days notice to the public. The only thing that really sort of calls out in the statute is you're supposed to issue a decision within a reasonable amount of time. Now, I think typically boards do that contemporaneously with the meeting, but you don't necessarily have to. I don't know if you want to kick it to the future. I wouldn't generally recommend it, but
we usually do it.
Yeah, that's right away. So conditional uses. So this, I think, bedevils BZAs more than anything else. So the underlying idea, you have your permitted uses and you have your prohibited uses. Clear enough, easy enough to understand. This one is sort of a special kind of permitted use. It's closer to a permitted use than it is a prohibited use, at least the way that I conceive of it. So essentially what the Zoning Commission and the trustees have said is, somewhere in this zoning district, this use is appropriate. Is appropriate.
Okay.
So let's say it's a residential area, and they've said it's a conditional use. You can do a daycare here, or you can do a school, or you can do a bed and breakfast. So what that policy judgment, what the legislative side of the township have said is, we think that somewhere in that district, somebody could run a bed and breakfast. Somebody could run a daycare. So then it sort of becomes your task to say, to determine whether where the applicant has asked for that use to occur is appropriate. So for example, you know, maybe something like the bed and breakfast, maybe you don't have a problem with that. Most places, you know, it's light traffic, it's really not that much different than, you know, a family with a couple of kids and people coming in and out or, you know, going to work and all that stuff, not that big a deal. But maybe, on the other hand, something like a daycare, a lot more traffic, you know, if they're going to have a, you know, play area outside and kids, you know, screaming in your mind and all that kind of stuff, you know, dropping that, you know, right in the middle of a fairly mature residential area that's not on a primary street and all that stuff, maybe you say, well, you know, somewhere in the rural residential area, or the your AR, I forget what you call it, that this is appropriate. It's just not here. You know, we'd like to see it more off a road, a major road. We'd like to see it, you know, maybe not quite on an intersection, you know, things like that. So that's more of what you should be looking at. My experience over the last 4.5 years, again, sort of sitting on my own board, is it's very easy to sort of get sucked into whether or not this use should be allowed. And that's not your call to make. Somewhere the legislative side have said, we think this, somewhere this is okay. So the question is, it here? So like, you know, a gas station in a commercial district, does it make sense to have the gas station maybe across the street from an ice cream parlor or next to a school and next to a daycare? It's like, that's a lot of kids and a lot of cars coming. Maybe that's not the best place to have a gas station. So, you know, those are the sorts of things that the conditional use should be screened for. And then the last sort of bullet point there is, what, because it's legislatively created, whatever the resolution tells you and whatever factors you should consider and whatever fact-finding you should do, that's what you should do. It shouldn't sort of just be ad hoc. Like, ah, we like bed and breakfasts. That's good. I mean, I'm from Granville, so we throw a stone, you hit a bed and breakfast. That's why it's... So, you know, I mean, you should still sort of say, well, this is what the resolution says, and we'll look at it. So I quoted, I forget which case for that from, but that's the sort of the legal definition of variance. So like I said, this is basically the state of Ohio saying, all right, we're going to give townships the ability to zone, but we don't want townships to run roughshod over everybody. So this variance is sort of an escape hatch where something is unique about that property, that property owner, and you say, really the zoning resolution shouldn't apply here. There's something special. Which, and I'm sure you've had a million people come in here and tell you just how special they are and how unique they are.
Oh, yeah.
And you say, no, you're not. So, you know, as you know, there are sort of the two basic variances, the use variance and area variances. So what I thought was maybe sort of worthwhile about talking about the use variances, they're difficult to get as a general matter because you have to prove a unique hardship and there's no other use economically viable. So an example of that might be, like on Maxtown Road, especially the closer you get to Route 3. It's more commercial, you've got industrial pockets here and there. So somebody's got a house that's really, you know, that's on a busy road, that's close to the road. You know, it's got much more value now, probably, as being a commercial, like an insurance agent, you know, a lawyer's office, something like that. So they want to come and say, hey, you know, I know this isn't so commercial, but I want to run my law. And that might be a situation where you say, well, it's kind of unique. Things have developed around you. You're surrounded by industrial. You're surrounded by commercial. Across the street's the city of Westerville, and they've done the same thing to you. You know, it's not feasible for you to try to sell that as another residential house. Now, so that applicant really has two decisions, and they sort of, I think, hash that out with Joe, is whether or not to ask for a rezone or whether or not to ask for a use variance. So while a use variance is, I think, generally speaking, hard to get because you're sort of, again, saying, like, we know what the resolution says, but we kind of know better, and we're going to throw that out the window. So the courts have said, you know, you can't go crazy with this. But at the same time, the benefit of a use variance over a rezone from a planning perspective is that if somebody comes to you and says, I want to run my insurance agency out of there, I want to run my title agency out of there, and you grant a use variance for that, that is the one and only use that's allowed. If you rezone it to commercial, it could be
anything.
Right. One day it could be a law office, the next day it could be a daycare, the day after that it could be
a beauty shop.
Yeah. I mean, you just whatever is a permitted use in that commercial zone. So, you know, I mean, that just one of the things to sort of keep in mind when you do get a use variance is maybe it makes better sense given the totality of the circumstances and the hardship and the uniqueness of the property. And I'm not saying that, you know, this is sort of, you know, I think it'll jump off the page of you, but maybe it makes sense to say, you know, giving a narrow use variance is better than forcing this guy to do a rezone or gal to do a rezone. So, area variance, you know, the Duncan standards. The only thing I just sort of want to mention to that is I've used them, boards use them, but they're not absolute, positively 100% have to use them. So if there's something that really jumps out at you factually about the area variance, that can be enough. Because the Supreme Court said, you know, we're going to give you these factors, but this isn't an exclusive list, and you don't have to use exactly this. So there's a little bit of flexibility. So you should generally use this. I'm not saying abandon it, but don't treat it like if, you know, four factors on one side, three factors on the other side, like,
well, I think we've historically always done the analysis. Now, whether or not we agree with, you know, it makes more sense to take you to an end result.
Right.
I personally think that's why I like to do it still. And I think it creates a process where you can make it make sense.
Well, one of the things that I'm like sort of jumps off the page again from my experience in Granville is now the lot size minimum are 5 acres. So you can't put a house on anything less than 5 acres anywhere in the township unless you're a planning developer. But there are plenty of parcels that 1 acre, half an acre, that sort of thing. I mean, whatever you could just squeeze a septic system on and put a house on, you've got a few of those. So, you know, if they want to put an accessory building up, there's no way they can meet the setbacks.
No.
They just can't. So, you know, that's one of those things that just sort of jumps off the page. Like, we could run the Duncan-Middlefield factor all day long, but there's a practical difficulty. There's really no way that this 1 acre lot can meet the setbacks and frontage and all that stuff intended for a 5 acre lot. It doesn't make sense. So that's why I sort of pointed out is there are times I think that, just so you know, I don't get the sense that BZA sort of slavishly follow this, but I just want to it's not. It is a good guide, and you should generally run the analysis. But occasionally, you just say, "Well, of course you can. Of course, you got to give me an area variance." Like
it was only that.
So I know again, Joe and Susan do a lot of your paperwork here. So, but you know, I did this as a presentation at our biennial training. So. You know, one of the things that I think is always good is to just ask if there's an abstention, get it on the record. Because sometimes, I don't know how much you've got it here, but I know we had a rational deliberative where the developer kept asking or demanding that people abstain, like, oh, because of one reason or another. So, you know, that way at least you can sort of address these issues. There's a place in it. You're not sort of thrown that, you know, you've got a nasty email saying, you know, you such and such should abstain and whatever. So, you know, it's not a bad practice to have. And again, I think Joe does the staff report or you do the staff report. I'm not sure he does it. So not every township has that. So
I do believe
that he does. That's a really interesting concept. I don't think we've ever experienced anything like that, but it's not to say that we wouldn't.
For the abstentions.
Yes.
So if somebody perceives that they have maybe a conflict of interest or, you know, their neighbor's asking for a variance, then I think probably from vice of the prosecutor's office, we determine, and then no one can perceive that they were influenced by that person.
Right.
Either.
Correct.
Because
even sitting in the audience, I guess, could potentially give the appearance of that.
Right, and that's what I think we usually say. If you're going to sort of disqualify yourself, then you should fully remove yourself.
Yeah.
But again, you're still. Sometimes the reason you take yourself off is because you're the neighbor or a neighbor or a close neighbor, and you do want to talk about it. And we're not going to tell you no. I mean, just because you're on the board doesn't mean you completely surrender your ability to have standing to object. So.
Sure. Could you then move out into the audience and just act like
sure.
a yeah?
You think that they can do that? Because we've been.
I don't recommend it.
Some that board members should not do that, but that didn't prevent their family from coming and saying so.
Well, so if the question is what's best practice, I'm going to say what we mentioned earlier is that you can obviously. The feeling would be you're influencing your other board members even though you're not participating in this particular matter. But. There's really, again, just because you're on the board doesn't mean you completely surrender your ability to say anything. So I would avoid it if you have a good surrogate, if your spouse is more than capable to come and sort of speak, on behalf of everyone. That's the best solution, but not everyone has that. Like, my wife would probably have absolutely no interest in standing up and testifying at a BZA here. Like, no, I got better things to do tonight.
Andrew, you mentioned, this is sort of a tangent, but you mentioned the staff reports. Are you coming back to that later in your presentation?
If you have a question, I wasn't really going to talk too much about it.
I just had a quick question.
No, sure.
I noticed that I think during this administrative year, Susan
was informed that she's no longer allowed to make a recommendation. And I found that very helpful. This is not how I make a living. I get a limited amount of time and exposure to whatever the issue may be. I found the staff report the recommendation to be beneficial to me. What was the ruling or what was the rationale behind not letting them make a recommendation to us?
So, sort of two things. First, I think it's still appropriate for the staff to give you the high level, again, sort of with the conditional use permit, sort of saying, hey, there's other permits issued in these such and such areas, or this area isn't like those other areas. So it's when you take that last final step and say, and this is what I think you should do, that's the sentence that we don't recommend that the zoning inspectors do, because this, particularly with this board is reviewing the zoning inspector's work. So it sort of puts the board and the zoning inspector in this relationship, and it can look like we're just talking about the extension, where you don't sort of want the zoning inspector making recommendations on
steering you in that direction.
Right. And the zoning inspector, too, is sort of has to sort of serve the trustees, who are the end result of the zoning resolution. So if you're doing variances or you interpret a conditional use permit a different way than maybe the trustees were, the zoning inspector is ultimately paid for and hired by the trustees, not you. So, that's why we just thought it's just better, completely fine to give you all the reasoning and all that sort of high level stuff, but just the last sort of sentence was what we didn't.
I can see that, because we have had instances where staff in the report will recommend it and then down the road they'll say, oh, well, I really wouldn't have done that. Well, okay, make up your mind. I didn't say that was you.
It was Joe Plexi.
It was some other guy.
But that position came out of your office then. That's not necessarily a court ruling or decision.
No, I think we talked about it. I can't remember how it came up for sure.
Well, we've not only heard that from Delaware County Prosecutor's Office, but other training sessions that we've sat in on like the OTA. We just went, I think last month, to a zoning inspector's meeting, and one of the speakers said you should not make a recommendation.
Yeah.
Because especially with appeals, the zoning inspector is more or less acting as a prosecutor.
Right.
And I appreciate that. I think that some analysis, though, is probably appropriate, and I think you're right. bring me right to the edge of the cliff, and then I'll decide whether I want to jump.
Jump right out, yeah.
And that's fine. Because Mark hit it on the head. This isn't what I
do. I don't typically do like surrounding areas, or if these are, you know, how many they've passed or anything over the last years, because I always thought they were supposed to do case by case. I mean, and they're, like you said before, a lot of the members have been on the board, so they do have a sense of, you know, whether we've granted something similar in the past. But to give past history on the property, try to do that, you know, so they know if there's been other variances or there's been, you know, what permits have been issued and such.
Well, I agree. I don't want to know, like, if we're going to do a conditional use permit, I don't want to know that we've done 17 others over the last 20 years allowing the same thing. I don't think that's relevant, because I think this board, it's more appropriate that we look at it on a case-by-case basis, as opposed to historical actions. I mean, that's important. Like, we just had that one because of last month with the barn.
Yeah.
And we saw historically what the PCA had done on that property.
And that was
but
very
I don't
good.
Need to know what we've done historically in the township for the last 15 years. I don't know.
And you can't really for variances, because the whole
idea
of a variance is
case
by
case.
Is unique.
Yep.
So conditional use, again, is sort of straddled a little bit, sort of it's like, well, it's a use we're allowing in the district, so like you can maybe sort of peek around a little bit. But with variances, you can't. And appeals,
right.
You really can't either. It's sort of like, did the zoning inspector apply or misapply the zoning resolution? So it is a very sort of narrow apples to apples sort of comparison you can even do with these.
So I guess from staff, someone comes into the office, they want to build, they said we're going to build an accessory building. They haven't actually applied, but they know that they're not meeting code. I mean, we don't have to render a decision for them to apply, right? They can just submit for the variance, even though they know if they turned in a permit, they wouldn't get it because...
Right. I mean, the way that I think that typically gets handled is informally like this, but, you know, the property owner could say, no, I think I'm entitled to the permit. I don't have to go get a variance or conditional use permit. I sort of demand that you issue me that. And then at that point, you're sort of at a, like, well, okay, well, if you're not going to apply for the variance, you think I'm entitled to it, then I got to deny you, and then I can appeal it and get the 20 days or whatever. So I think most people, I mean, you get those people that put a buck out of their head and want to run through the brick wall, but, you know, I think most people would sort of understand when the zoning inspector's telling you, like, this is the way you got to go, like, you're not going to get it. Public comment, again, this is another place where meetings just can get completely derailed. I sat through one BZA hearing that lasted over three meetings, and it was mostly because of public comment. So, you know.
Were they pertinent?
No.
I'm not going to make any statement about public comment, but we have been extremely fortunate during my time on the board that we really haven't experienced a lot. And I have, when I was chairman of Parks years ago, we had several meetings where we filled this room, but thankfully we haven't risen to that occasion on BZA.
Three of us.
Of course, now, you know, as soon as I say that, next month, here it is.
So I would just be careful with that. I mean, to be honest with you, it can sort of swing the other way where now you're starting. You're trying to be nice to the public. I mean, generally speaking, very few people have standing anyhow to complain about it. And if you're by trying to be nice to the public and continually delay the developer and all that sort of stuff, I mean, it's really starting to be adverse to the applicant.
I tend to let it, if somebody wants to speak, I tend to let them speak. Unless the chairs are full, and then that's a whole other circumstance. But thankfully, we haven't had that.
Can we put that in the practice of procedures? Can we limit in there to say so that it's a matter of public record that comment period will not extend beyond 30 minutes?
Yeah. And then the county commissioners have a public comment policy that they've enacted.
Oh,
so, I mean, you can do that. You can say, you know, each speaker gets 3 minutes.
Right.
I mean,
in zoning, that's what they
right.
do, 3 or 5 or whatever the number is. So, and I'm not opposed to doing something like that, but we really haven't, it hasn't really been necessary.
Right. Well, that's good. One of the things I recommended, and I think this was sort of done this last time through by the trustees on one of the issues, was, I mean, generally speaking, the contiguous landowners are usually the only ones that, for your purposes, have any standing
mm-hmm.
that can go file appeal. Now, there's a few people that can sort of jump over that. So, you know, if you do get a packed house, what you may want to do is sort of say, hey, contiguous landowners, you get to come up and speak, and we'll, you know, give you 5 minutes. Or as long as you want, whatever, and everybody else, you get 2 minutes. Or
right.
Because they're, you know, they're just venting, really. They
sure.
don't have any standing. So.
That makes sense, too.
So that's something else to sort of keep
we
in mind.
We should probably craft a policy just in the off chance that something like that happens.
You better off doing it
probably
in advance than
yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah.
in case of a situation.
You know, at least we've got a rule, you know, rules of procedure that we can follow it, and it's
right.
not, and it's clear, it's defined, it's not a surprise.
Right.
Well, now it'll happen.
Oh, yeah, well, you know it will. It's coming in July for you.
Before Christmas.
Again, I know you've got the script that sort of helps you follow this, you know, and I think you guys sort of formally closed the public portion. I've seen that as being helpful, that there's some sort of indicating to the audience, like, you can no longer talk.
Right.
Because if you don't, and I've been in these meetings, it's like a community meeting, you know.
Right. Then it's
Bill
a
has a comment.
Right.
And then Jane has a comment, and then the board's interacting with the peanut gallery.
And I'm probably a little more lenient than my predecessors were. And you're right. You, all of a sudden, you're in the middle of this, and it's a tennis match, and now you are
right.
running for a way out. And I, yeah.
So, and you know, again, sort of how you run your meetings is completely up to you. Some people like, you know, again, the north and the more rural, and that's just sort of being really rude if you don't let people. So, you know, it's all sort of what works for you guys. I just, again, sort of seeing it, I think if there is this moment where you're like, going once, going twice, all right, no one else, you can't talk.
Right.
So a lot of times our out is, excuse me, but our meetings are recorded, so
right.
can
you
got
to come up to the podium.
Right, so, you know, I know Mark does that a lot. He'll use that, you know, to get one person to speak at a time, and
right.
they have to come up and they have to state who they are because we're recording,
right.
and you have to be able to do minutes and all. So that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. You do that well.
Thank you.
And I would just make sure, again, especially because you guys are quasi-judicial, I think this is important, that you allow the applicant sort of a closing argument, that after everybody has said something, they get a chance to respond.
Mm-hmm.
We try not to leave them hanging.
That's good.
Really, we let them, I've let them respond to the public before because they know their application better than I do. I'm not going to answer the question.
No, and I think that's good because, again, you're sort of like judges, so you got to be fair. So if somebody makes a comment, you got to, all right, unless you talk.
I try.
Yeah.
Some people won't come back 2 or 3 times?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. They will.
So, what I gave this little checklist here, and it tracks, I think, what Joe and Susan do for you. But, you know, I think checklists and procedural type things are always helpful. I mean, in our office, we've got them for, like, contracts, we've got them for levy things, we've got them for this, that, and the other thing. Because you just, in order to know, all right, I need to make sure this is included, this is included, this is included. So, again, I know you sort of have a script that's a little bit superfluous, but you know, it's just something to make sure that before you issue your decision and sort of meeting adjourned, you've marked your exhibits, you've incorporated the exhibits, you've done your findings of fact, you've done all that stuff. So, again, I know you normally have this, but I just thought I would.
No, it's good.
So, here's a couple of pitfalls that, again, sort of from my own experience and then from sort of sitting through. I'm a professional meeting sitter through.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's, I actually don't mind it. Again, my wife is like, how do you do this?
Yeah. Yeah, I last about 10 minutes. Well, I used to go to the trustee meetings and I, you know, I got a life.
Yeah, I feel you. So factual findings, I mean, this is important, particularly good for you guys, because what's going to happen if somebody's aggrieved is they're going to go to the common pleas court. And I think we lawyers are odd people, we're different. So, and then you magnify that with
there are exceptions to
it. I hear a little dissension.
No, I gathered that by the
the suit gave it away.
It did. Okay. And judges are maybe a little bit even more so. So what you sort of swim against, at least again sort of in my experience here in the county, there's sort of this expectation that you're going to perform reasonably close to what the judge would have done sitting in your position. It's not a stated expectation. I don't think it's a realistic expectation, but it's the sense that I've gotten from both of the current common pleas judges, and I don't know what the new one will be like, but I don't think it'll change a whole lot with him. So making sure that you make the factual findings is important, because the judge is going to look at what you did, and if you have said, hey, you know, we considered all these facts and we determined that, you know, this was a substantial variance because it asked for, you know, 110% of what the setback was, or, you know, bulk area, or whatever it is. You've sort of thought that out. And then the judge has to say that that was somehow arbitrary, capricious, unreasonable. And if you put something in the record, that's much harder to do than if you just sort of talk generally about stuff and then say motion denied or motion approved. Because then the judge can just sort of say, well, they didn't really fully consider this. Hmm. So like I said, I think I looked at something you did recently and went through the Duncan factors. I think it's good. You should at least do, you know, put something pen to paper. The more you can weave in specific facts, the better off you are. And I'm sure you can appreciate this.
I think we were getting a lot of guidance in that area for a long time, and I think we relied on it maybe a little too much. And then when we were getting almost very limited or no guidance when we were going through the process, I think we're better now than we were 6 or 8 months ago. I think we're coming back into the process of doing it ourselves, of going through the findings of fact. I think the last meetings we've been better at that. But I see where you're going with the findings of fact and how it relates to Duncan versus Middlefield. And I think that's definitely a point that we really have to work on going forward.
I mean, believe me, it's good that you sort of say substantial justice will be done. But if you can sort of point to why you think that's
right.
Even better.
Right.
So, I mean, at least if you sort of pointed to something and you said, we found, then again, the judge sort of says, well, is that arbitrary or capricious? But if you've now given a reason, then it's sort of doubly hard. Well, then that judge has to say, well, that reason that they even, that's just totally off base.
Illogical, yeah.
Right. So, so they're really important, because if you don't put them, you're basically, all the work you did is not going to carry any real weight with the judge. I mean, it's going to be essentially a do-over. They're going to read the transcript and do what they want. Which is a big demand, but at least you should.
And I don't want to get caught in a situation. I don't remember ever being on this board when this happened, but I don't want to get caught in a situation where we just speed through it, done, okay, let's get out of here. Because that's not what we do, and I don't want to be
right. Yeah, I mean, that's, we were sort of talking about that earlier, and the judicial way of saying that, like talismanic phrases, you're just sort of like chanting the words, and it's like, all right, motion approved, motion denied, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, well,
that's
you did something, but it may be still not enough. So, you know, it's one of those things, I mean, generally speaking, as you're having your discussions, each board member typically has something that comes to their mind more than another board member. And usually, it sort of works out that somebody's talked about each of the factors, one of the, you know, five of the factors in one way or another. So if you can sort of circle back and say, hey, you know, I share that same concern, let's make that part of the motion or whatever, you're good to go.
So if the board goes through each one of the factors and they've had discussion on them, I think sometimes then, because typically we put those in the motion also, historically the board has always done that. They've put them, but are you saying since they've talked about them, they could just give the reasons? They don't have to necessarily reread every factor again.
Well, I'm sort of saying when you do your finding for that, if you're doing Duncan, so you're marching down your things, instead of just saying it's not a substantial departure or whatever it is, you say it's not a substantial departure because it's only like a 5% difference in area.
And we do that.
Right. So that's what I'm, so stuff like that, like for like burdening the public utilities and things like that.
Right.
You say, well, it's not burdening the public utilities because, you know, sewer's available in the area, water's available in the area, you know, they can easily tap in. There's no burden there whatsoever.
Well, that brings up an interesting question. Do we need, we do the analysis, and then when somebody makes the motion, we do the analysis again. Is that really particularly necessary?
We don't do the analysis again. We just repeat
we repeat the analysis.
You can do it that way as part of making the motion. Another way you can do it is if you sort of make some one of you sort of the scribe, and as you're talking about it, sort of say, you know, sort of by agreement. Yeah, is that? I mean, does everyone sort of feel like that's
right.
That it's not that it does meet that standard or it doesn't burden public things? So at the end of it, you could conceivably make that part of your motion, that exhibit whatever is, you know, incorporated in, and that's your findings of facts. Because, I mean, if you actually call our office and said, hey, can we get a packet for the BZA, you'll see when Chris did this many, many years ago, there's actually a section of just lines for like a page or two for findings of facts.
And then the
document.
Then
it contemplated writing it out contemporaneously with the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, I realize that, it does not have to be an exhaustive, like you're writing a United States Supreme Court opinion. But I think, you know, again, as you're sort of going along, sort of, if you get a sense that there's a general consensus about something, just ask, like, hey, is that what we think? We think it doesn't burden or whatever, then just put it down. So, I think it's particularly, you know, where you're going to have to really make sure you're dotting your I's and crossing your T's is either one where you're going to do a denial, because then they can appeal that.
Sure.
Or two, somebody was standing and showing up and they're very hot about it, because that means that they can appeal.
Sure.
So, you know, in the ordinary case where some guy wants his accessory building like a foot over and no one's here and you're like, who cares about a foot? Like, you know, spending a half hour doing your factual findings, I'm not going to tell you that you must do it. But again, in a case where you're like, there's no way we're going to have this guy this variance,
right.
This gal, you just say, well,
right.
You know, that's when you want to make sure you've got everything.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And the time that I've been chairman, I've always tried to make sure that if it's gonna come back, if we're going to deny it, I have to assume it's going to come back.
Right.
Some form or fashion. And I want to make sure that we're, you know, as we used to say in banking, belts and suspenders.
Right. I mean, I, like, just not to sort of tell war stories, but I mean, like, when one of my BZA meetings recently, the bed and breakfast, and I wanted to put a parking area within like 40 feet of his neighbor's property. The neighbor didn't show up. Neighbor didn't seem to care. So I'm asking, like, do you think you need to put some screening there? Another member and I were both like, I kind of think there's screening. Should be more screening. Two other board members are like, we don't think so. So both of us like, fine. Like, no screening.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but, you know, had the neighbor shown up and been like, well, yeah,
sure.
Then you're sort of in a different boat.
Yep.
Because
we've had situations just like that. Absolutely. Neighbor shows up, that makes a big difference.
It does. So, you know, don't hear me say that you should shortcut what you're doing. I'm just talking about memorializing your factual findings.
I didn't, that's not at all what I did.
I just made sure.
My wife says my hearing's not that good, but.
Sort of the next two, because conditional uses, again, this is one, it just, it gets away, and it gets away fast, especially when you have an angry audience that comes up. So the idea behind conditional uses is the decision has been made by the zoning commission and the trustees that somewhere in the district, this is an appropriate use. So in that circumstance, the general developmental standards should apply to this just like everything else, lighting, drainage, parking, all that stuff. So in theory, by giving them a conditional use permit, all you're saying is you can do that and you're going to be subject to all the other requirements in the zoning resolution. Because this is still sort of a legislative type creature, it's not like a variance where you get to sort of, you know, do what you want. There's the only, your only review is the common pleas court. I mean, the trustees have sort of given you this review capacity. So don't, my advice is don't go crazy with conditions. I mean, I've been at meetings where they're like, well, we want to control this, you know, where the light goes, where the, you know, where the hours are, where the signs you put, this, that. You know, at the end of the day, the general development standard should be sufficient to control this property. If it's not, then it's probably not the right location. Right.
And I always worry about enforcement, too. Who's
going to enforce that? Well, that was sort of my
next. Ah, well, sorry about that. I'll be on my way now.
No, you're fine. Because, again, that sort of creates a problem for the zoning inspector. Like, you know, your hours are from, you know, 10 to 2 on Sunday. I mean, does the zoning inspector got to show over there at 2:05 and make sure they're shut down? I mean, so, you know, you just be careful with those conditions, especially conditions that are easy to placate somebody that's upset, but then there's no real standard behind them. Like, the lights won't be too bright. The noise won't be too loud.
Yeah.
The odors won't be too smelly.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way to enforce that. And I do get these questions from time to time, you know, with like a picture, you know, is this? I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think the light's too bright. The neighbor obviously thinks the light is too bright. So, I mean,
yeah.
But there's no standard. So that basically means we would sort of have to roll the dice and go to court and ask 12 people, do you think it's too bright? So just be careful with that. I mentioned this sort of the last two already. You know, I would stay away from multiple hearings. I've been in them, and I get the sense the board thinks it's going to make things better. It only makes things worse because people get angrier after each meeting, after the next, and they get better organized, and they get, you know, and
fell into
more hostile
on a couple applications towards the end of last year, and the real issue has been that
they didn't have enough information.
Right, is that the information we were getting,
information.
And I would prefer to have you come across a curve and give me the facts and I can make an informed decision, but if I can't, then it is what it is at that point.
And I mean, I'm not saying never postpone, whatever.
I get it.
It just, sometimes it just, like I said, makes a bad situation.
But on one where it brings out the public and fills the room, yeah, that's probably not one that I wouldn't want to be on that ride multiple times.
I mean,
done that, and it's
right.
Not fun.
If it's like a technical problem where they've omitted something significant,
sure.
And you say, all right, we've already published it in the paper, we're not going to deny you, make you refile, and pay that fee all over again.
Usually a drawing issue.
Right.
Yeah.
Those are completely...
Yeah, he wanted to put a... the one that comes to mind is he wanted to put a porch on the front of his house, but he really didn't know where he was in relation to setback.
Yeah, he had no idea.
Yeah.
And I didn't either. He thought I might know, and I didn't know you didn't either.
Like, no, I don't know where
go you're... Go figure.
No, I've been where you're...
Because I live all the way down there, and he lives all the way up there.
Or we get three different versions of setback.
Yes.
That's
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And now I think that was what we got. Well, it's this or... It's either this, or this.
Yeah.
Which
yeah, three
pick
versions.
One. Well,
right.
I'm terrible at that, too.
I mean, so again, I'm not saying never.
No, I get it.
And just runaway public comment, I mentioned that earlier. So I don't know if any of you have been through this. I mean, Cardinal Storage started out life as this. It went to an administrative
appeal. I was on the board when we did, and it may or may not predate you, was the McGuire application.
No, I don't
remember. It was over here on Sunbury where there was a discussion, there was a disagreement over where the actual... property line was, so we couldn't determine the setback. So the application was denied, and that went to common pleas. I think I'm pretty sure we actually won that one. But That's the only one. That, and I know Cardinal has been out there for a while, but I don't really find a lot of responsibility for this board for that issue.
No, I mean, and for what it's worth, I mean, I think, because I represented the board in the first stage of the Cardinal, and then they decided, hey, we think it's going to be better to do this as a plan.
Right.
So, and then they came back again. So that, I just emphasizing the factual findings, because again, the court, I just get the sense, particularly in this county, you're going to get, they don't expect you to be lawyers, but I get the sense they kind of expect you to be lawyers.
I understand.
So, so standing, you know, again, you know, generally speaking, at least on at the common police court level, unless you guys want otherwise, it'll be our office that represents you, or if we have a conflict for some reason or another, which is possible depending on maybe our involvement with the zoning inspector or something before that. So, you know, standing always becomes an issue, and that's why I mentioned that earlier, people that are maybe contiguous landowners, or so they have to point to something. Again, you know, that's recently, for one of the townships in Harlem, we won a case on the standing because there was a neighbor, like two properties removed, that filed the appeal. And the court said, you're not a contiguous landowner. You're not even really adjacent, so sorry for you, go away. And so that narrows the universe of people down that can appeal, especially if you've given the landowner what they want. So the court standard review I mentioned, you know, it's arbitrary, capricious, it's in the statute. The General Assembly wasn't content with just one word. There's like six in there that mean essentially the same thing. A record and transcript, you may remember from the Cardinal thing, it's actually this board's obligation to put the administrative record together and submit it to the court. The applicant actually has to ask for the transcript to be transcribed, if it hasn't been already. And then appeal to the Court of Appeals. If, pretty much the way the standard works is, if you've won at the common pleas level, you're almost always going to win Court of Appeals level, just because they take an extraordinarily deferential review of what the Common Pleas Court did. So
let me ask you about the transcript, because I know this was a big discussion point with the trustees. What's the official record? The transcript, the tape, or both?
Well.
Are you saying transcript or minutes?
When I say the paper.
Okay.
The paper, the recording, or both?
Because there's minutes, transcript, and recording. So you could have three possible.
Right. So this goes back to a little bit of what I alluded to earlier, that 519.14 allows you guys to set your rules. Mm-hmm. But, and I've looked into this. Really not good case law on what the boundaries of that is.
Right.
Or what those boundaries are. So, you know, if you want to take a real stake out, a real aggressive position, and sort of say, hey, Zoning Commission trustees, we're an independent board, we're statutorily created, the state of Ohio delegated power to us, they told us we get to do our own procedures, we're going to designate whatever we want as our, then I think you've got an argument for that. I can't tell you what a court's going to say, because there's really no case law on that. Alternatively, you could just sort of default to whatever the trustees and Zoning Commission do. So there's no right answer. I don't think you should do the written transcript as the minutes, because that, I think, sort of defeats the purpose of minutes.
Okay.
The recording part of it is sort of depends on what the way you're using it. The commissioners, their minutes are the video recordings.
Okay.
But they keep a journal of all the resolutions, and it's, you know, whenever they're doing like a road vacation or they're doing annexation or ditch petition or whatever. I mean, all that stuff gets recorded as part of the journal entry on the resolution. The coal contract gets plopped in there. So it's for them, the video of the minutes only sort of adds a little bit of texture and a little bit of background, sort of how they reached the decision they made. But if you pull the journal, you'll see all of the operative facts, law, and stuff in the entry. So it kind of depends on what you want to do. I think probably for your purposes, the minutes like you guys are doing it makes the most sense. rather than sort of saying, we're blessing.
Because I think the trustees are exactly the opposite.
That is.
Mistaken.
They are.
Yeah, they still use the recordings as their official record.
Right. Which makes, again, it makes a little bit more sense because of what they're doing versus what you're doing. But ultimately, I think there's a good argument that it's your call. It's your board. You guys get to decide sort of how you want to do it. You just need to make sure that Pat puts it on the record retention schedule, however you do it.
We probably should, if we're going to do some rule of procedure revision, we should probably at least address that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the end result looks like, but maybe that's something we ought to at least a talking point. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it just depends. I mean, if you had a journal full of stuff like this,
yeah,
and laid out all the facts and, you know, all your stuff, then maybe you say, the audio is good enough. We don't want to waste somebody's time and typing up minutes because they could pull this thing off and they know everything that happened.
Right.
So really, like I said, it's just sort of what you think is, because the way you have to have minutes, 122 point whatever, mm-hmm, the open meetings requires you to have minutes, and the way that the courts have interpreted that is it has to provide the factual basis for your decision making, because what they don't want to have happen is, you know, boards basically decide everything amongst themselves,
right,
offline, come in, basically vote a bunch of stuff and then leave. The minutes need to reflect some discussion, some deliberation and whatnot. But again, if your resolution sort of put all that stuff in there where somebody could just easily look and say, okay, well, I know why they did this, I know why they did that, making them sort of plow through the audio recording, that would be their own decision. But if you sort of take the more minimalist approach, like, well, we're going to only sort of put stuff in and this, that, and the other thing, and we'll put in our minutes sort of how we reach decisions, sort of the general discussion, that kind of thing, then, you know, maybe you want it as written. So, like I said, it's just sort of how you approach your journal and minutes and that kind of stuff.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You were first.
For an appeal, though, can you get the tone of the meeting based on the audio?
You can. I don't know.
Does it change any?
I don't know what the judge will do. I mean, I think with the Cardinal, I put the audio on the CD. Because what I'll typically do with the administrative appeals is I'll put the everything on a CD rather than file a stack of documents like this and file the CD. So, I mean, I can put it on there. Joe can put it on there. Applicant wants the transcript, they're entitled to have it produced. So, and I would guess the court is more accustomed to reading transcripts than listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's probably what would happen, but I just don't know. So that's kind of an answer, non-answer.
That was a very good non-answer, though.
They did transcribe the.
They did.
The
for both Cardinal and
but
both,
they,
both Cardinals.
I mean, since the board has to have minutes, I mean, they have to officially do minutes, then they might as well keep doing minutes, right?
Well, or you could designate the audio as minutes. I mean, it's just, like I said, it sort of depends on what paper you're actually creating.
But does the Ohio Revised Code say it has to be written minutes? Because I thought I read in there, it says written minutes.
Doesn't have to be written.
Okay.
They have speech to text now, too, that it'll automatically.
As board members, what paper should we retain individually? When I first started, we were recycling everything. At the end of the meetings, Susan had a nice little stack, and we would just basically deposit everything there. But you're not going to call us as witnesses, common
no.
Things. So do we need to retain anything?
So, with the record and transcript, and that's part of the reason I put it on there, so thank you for reminding me, everything that the court will use to make its decision should be in what's submitted up there. Now, occasionally you can add stuff to it if the other side can prove there was some reason why it wasn't included. So, I don't think, so long as someone is acting as the records custodian, which I would guess is your zoning secretary,
staff. I use that blanket phrase. Somebody in this building.
So as long as you have a records custodian that's keeping your stuff, you don't individually have to keep your stuff.
Right.
In fact, it's probably beneficial not to keep your stuff, because then you can't get a discovery request or whatever, a subpoena. You'd be like, well, I don't have anything.
I never saved. I have not a shred of documentation as long as I've been on the board.
Right. I mean, I don't keep my stuff.
There you go.
So as long as somebody's doing it and somebody's adhering to the records retention schedule.
I rely on staff.
But you will keep your checklist.
And everything is available, again, electronically. Anyway, I mean, you get all the applications and everything electronically, and they're retained, hopefully, unless we have some major crash. They are retained in the office.
Unless the fiber optic gets cut again.
So was that helpful?
Yeah,
sure. Teresa's like, no.
Yeah.
I actually, I wish that I had seen you 7 years ago when I first came on the board, because this is, my time on the board, I had to learn by driving the car, and for somebody new coming on the board, I think it's very
helpful. And we've seen them drive.
Did you think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I would suggest maybe come back next year and do it again. She'll be okay.
As long as she gets to sit over here.
She'll call off
sick.
And she was like, we've seen you crisscross that, right?
We've seen you drive the car.
Well, I mean, are there any other questions? I mean, I'm happy to talk about anything. Talk about highway dedication. We can talk about sanitary sewer effluence. I mean, whatever you want, we can talk about.
Yeah, let's not.
You know, it's been so much fun, but I don't want to keep it.
I mean, if anybody has any questions, but I don't want to talk about sanitary. I'm good with that.
I'm going to talk to Antoinette.
Garbage.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Andrew, for coming
out.
I really appreciate
it.
I think it's been very helpful. Like I said, I wish that as a new member of this board, I had had you come in and talk to us at that point. Because I was chairman of Parks for, 5 years?
Forever.
And too long. When I came over here, it was a whole different environment. Parks is fun. Well, can be. Unless you want to put a soccer field somewhere, then it's not that much fun.
I didn't record a design game from it, so we do need to pick up a
series. Okay, so.
And you're welcome to call me, send me emails. I think Joe usually, if he thinks there's some legal issue that's going to hit you, he usually
I usually go through Susan, and I mean, I know where she is. She knows where to find me, so we really haven't had any. I don't think we've really had any big issues. Quite a while. Well, yeah, I mean, I was leaving that on the table.
See where I started?
Okay. So, unless there's any additional business, which I'm not aware of. Oh, you know what? I do have one point of business, perhaps. Even if we don't have an application for next month, do we want to come in and discuss rules of
policies and procedures?
Do we want to do that, which will be June 27th?
Something
like that? Yeah, that's do we want right. To do that?
Right here it is.
Here. Oh, look at that. No, that says Wednesday.
This next meeting.
Yeah, but it says Wednesday the 27th.
It is a Wednesday
because
you guys
voted
to.
Mm-hmm.
We had to give
why did we
someone
have to
the
do
room on Tuesday.
We have a conflict.
Yeah, it
on
is
that
Wednesday.
I think we really remember
that.
Yeah,
I got that.
So
the
this,
trustees are going to be
do
in
you,
here.
Do you people want to do that or not? And I'm totally flexible.
I think if we're going to do it, it'd be good to do it while we don't have anything else.
For me personally, it'd be beneficial.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it's something.
All right. I mean,
the thing is
if
we get applications,
we'll have to do applications if we get applications.
Right.
We won't. But even if we don't, you want to still come in and do this or not? I mean, and I'm just putting it out there. I'm
flexible. I think we should.
As of today, I'm not aware of anything coming in to mean that it's going
to,
you know,
do we need to make a motion to meet then in June, or do we just schedule?
We didn't have to for this one.
Yeah. Okay. Then you want to plan on meeting in June then?
Yes. Everybody? Susan, yes. do you make some notes about some items that we ought to talk about adding to the practice and procedure policy?
I did make notes when you guys said we should talk about this.
You did.
Yeah. And then
that's a good start for us.
Yeah, and then we can just come in and you know, spend an hour and run through and talk about that and see what we want it to look like.
Could you send the current ones out to us in advance so we can read them before we get here?
I haven't seen them in
And also, for a new person to be able to have that policy procedure would be terrific.
They used to, when I came on the board, they gave me a key to the front door, and they gave me the rules of procedure.
And then we got my key. Yeah.
Right, see? And
we didn't give you a key?
Then you can have mine.
But give us that information.
I don't remember seeing them in a while.
Yeah.
So, okay, then we'll plan on meeting in June for that purpose, if that's the only purpose.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Oh. Thank you. I apologize. I did that in person, and I did not, but I want to officially welcome Jeff Bishop to the board.
Thank you.
I'm sure that your service will be very rewarding. Because you'll have the opportunity to hang out with us.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
And we look forward to your service. And how long have you been a Genoa Township resident?
Off and on since 2000.
Zoning resolution? It's all the zoning things? That one?
Short time.
Yeah, I moved out in Franklin County for a year.
I think it was,
got it. What is your profession?
I own an insurance agency here in town.
Oh, you're an insurance agency?
Yes,
I am.
Okay, well, you're in good company. You got an attorney, you got an appraiser, and you've got other people.
We got
a nurse, right? All right, well, welcome.
Thank you.
And we'll expect you to pull your weight from the first time.
So,
all right, unless there's any other business, then I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Seconded, and I'm not going to call a roll. I'm just going to.
Consent agenda.
Consent.
There you go.
8:25.
Thank you, Andrew. Right. Well, if I can shave a minute off of your meeting with doing consent agenda.
In theory, see?
Well, that's the one that they do.
Oh, I've never had.